Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice and welcome to Two Fat Expats. Why fat? Because this is the podcast that will fill you up with fat ideas on how to live your expat life to the fullest. Now, while some of us choose to sign up for short-term contracts, knowing that the end date is clear, others go into their expat life using a little bit more leeway, knowing that while there's no definite end date, at some point the jig will be up. And then there's the others, the lifers, those who've made the decision to stay put for the long haul. Today we're going to talk about them. This week I'm in Doha, Qatar, and Nikki Moffat is in Hamburg, Germany. Shall we go and say hello? Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice, and a happy International Women's Day to you.
It is International Women's Day. So we are March the 8th today, for those who are listening, you know, in 10 years' time in October. This is March 8th, and it is International Women's Day, and well worth mentioning. You know, we make lots of jokes about we are women, and we are international, although that's not really what it's about. But it's always important to remember our expat women on this International Day. What does the day look like for you?
Yeah, so today I'm doing the podcast recording and I'm going to empower my international self, woman self, by doing some German and some other odd jobs. I need to read lots of correspondence in German today. So powering up for International Women's Day.
You go, girl. For me, I am truly living the international expat life. My husband and youngest son are on their way to Kuwait this afternoon. They're going for a baseball tournament in Kuwait. So I will have, you know, one child in Australia, a couple of family members in Kuwait, a couple of kids here. We're going to talk about lifers this week. So there's, I guess, four types of lifers when I think about it. Please feel free to add any others if you can think of some. But I guess one is if you've married someone from somewhere else and you're living in that other country with them.
Another one is if you've had children with someone and now you subsequently can't or won't leave the country because of that.
Yeah, or if you've started a business that you can't sell and it doesn't operate without you, that might leave you stuck in another country forever.
And another kind of lifer is if you've lived an expat life and then retire overseas.
Yes, and we hate those people, don't we? Because they're the people.
Well, we want to know them so we can visit them.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't say we hate them. Just say hi.
All right, hate's a strong word. You're right. We're very jealous of those people because those are the people that have saved their pennies in their expat life or all their lives, and they've gone off to live out their days on the beach in Bali or Spain or Thailand or one of those places. But yes, they've decided to go and retire overseas, so they've become lifers elsewhere. For me personally, I liked, obviously we put out the question on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle Facebook page, and I really loved what Jo Adamson had to say, and that was that with her, it was a we're here until we're not, and that for us is very much the case. We never know how long we're going to be somewhere. Particularly at the moment with my husband going through a merger through work, we could be out of here in the next 6 to 8 weeks. But yeah, for us, it's very much we're here until we're not. What about you, Nikki? What category do you fit into?
I am in the Jo Adamson we're here until we're not category as well. So that's what I think. We're also going through a merger. My husband's also going through a merger and we're also waiting to hear, but we probably have till December or January until we hear something more. So we're maybe here till the end of the year at least. Right. So as we said at the outset, there's all sorts of different lifers. Lucy is an Australian who married a Frenchman and then lived there for 10 years. And so that was kind of her new life. And then they became expats together. So the question for them is when and where to settle and if they settle and where to do it. So Australia, France, or somewhere in between. Nice choices.
Oh, very nice choices. I really loved Becca Hinckley Osborne's attitude. She said, "We left with the mindset that every move is permanent until someone tells us otherwise." And they've been expats for about 8 years now. And I really, really agreed with her because I've done that. I did the location where I treated it very temporarily because we knew that we were going to be off elsewhere. And I just thought while we were talking about lifers that that was really, really good advice to go with. That, yeah, maybe we all need to treat our expat locations like they are there forever.
And that's true because some companies do have quite a structured pattern and they say, okay, you're here for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. But then there are a lot, I think probably more expats who just go from job to job or company to company and need to have that sort of mindset. And maybe you go somewhere and you think it's for 2 years, but something changes. So you should look at it that way as well. Totally agree with that. Christine Armstrong-Biggs calls herself a lifer. She left Canada in 1996 to get a few years teaching experience before she went back to school for a master's. The master's never happened. She got married in Kuwait in 99. She had her first child in Sweden and then moved to Belgium in 2002 and has been there ever since. So we might guess that her partner is Belgian, but we're not sure. She calls herself a lifer. I think we went back and said so on the page. You went back and asked her, but we haven't heard back yet. So, Christine, if you're listening, let us know.
Now, Muriel Jewell said she's not sure if she'll ever return home, especially because her and her husband aren't from the same country. Now, this came up a lot, and this is why, you know, we said that so many lifers are people who have married someone from somewhere else. But yeah. There's also that other thing where you're both from somewhere else and then you head off in your expat life and you both can't decide whose country you're going to call home, so you choose neither and you go somewhere completely different. And I noticed that a lot when we were in Canada. We'd have a friend where she was a Kiwi and he was from Norway, and neither of them could agree on where was better, so they set up neutral ground in Canada.
Neutral ground. Canada loves that its reputation as a neutral ground place. So that's perfect. It's all perfect.
It does. Now, Muriel said that she feels that expat life really suits them and that they just settle wherever they are. She believes that home is where the heart is. And as far as she's concerned, that can be in more than one place at the same time. And I definitely agree with that. You don't have to be in that one spot. It's all about where the people are, and you can have many different spots.
I agree wholeheartedly with Muriel. Laura McDonald is a lifer for now. It's hard to say for the people that say they have really no plan, but they just want to keep going. So I'm with Laura on that. So Laura left for 2 years in Nigeria 25 years ago, 6 countries later, and still no plan. So no plans are the best plans, in my opinion.
Now, that is your opinion, Nikki Moffat.
That is my opinion. Plans,
whereas I am a planner, but I'm a long-distance planner, I've realised. So my husband would be coughing up his lunch probably now if he heard me say I'm a planner, because I'm not a great planner for tomorrow or next week, but I'm a fantastic planner for 35 years from now. And this is why I found Linda so interesting, because she said she moved to Abu Dhabi in 79. She'd met her husband there. He'd moved like a few years earlier with his family. And they know that they're going to have to leave the Middle East in their retirement and when their employment ends, but they're just a little bit shaky on the details. They've got a home in England and they've got a home in Syria. They're 63 years old now, and they've got one child who's living in Dubai and one in Doha. They're really hoping that they'll be able to just go back and forth and visit their kids and see their grandkids and, you know, stay with their kids. But they know that they can't stay here forever. And this is the bit that kills me. Because, yes, I like to think that in my, you know, 70s, I would be in one spot where my children could come and go and visit me, you know, from that one spot and be around. But I don't know, it's hard if you think of your kids all over the place, isn't it?
Well, it is. And the other thing about these kids is that they're obviously born in the Middle East and they've grown up there. And you wonder, and we don't know everyone's full story, but whether they have any residency rights, so whether they'll eventually have to leave as well. So it's very interesting, because I want to say to you, I don't think that when you're in your 70s you want to sit in one spot and have your kids visit you.
I'm pretty sure you're
going to be on a world tour. No.
You know why? Because I don't want to travel like that in my 70s, because I'm a big believer of that
you're
is when...
planned for that?
Yeah, that's when I'm getting in my caravan.
You're going to be a grey nomad.
I have done bugger all travel in Australia in my youth, apart from last year, we took the kids to Uluru because we really felt that we should. We kind of sort of ticked the box of that one, and it was fantastic. I'd highly recommend it to everyone. But I haven't done lots of travel around Australia. And the reason I haven't, and I don't feel any guilt or worry about it, is I think, well, that's what I'm going to do in my caravan. And the whole idea of the beach house is I will rent out the beach house, and Greg and I will hop. Now, he's still unsure about the caravan.
I was going to say, does he have any idea about what's going to happen in his future? He's going to be hooking and unhooking the caravan.
No, he's got different ideas of how we'll do the travel, but...
RV.
But we are leaving that one, because I find international travel... Well, for a start, I hate flying, which is something I obviously don't talk
about. That is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
I do. I hate flying. I also hate being all crammed up in economy, and there's no way we're going to be able to afford to fly around the world business class, in our retirement.
What you do with your air miles.
We've had far too many children. So, yeah, I sort of see that I'll do it in the comfort of a car where I can stop every 2 hours and have a drink and go to the loo and stretch my legs and walk around. For God's sake, I'm 70.
How are your kids going to find you if you're travelling around Australia? You see, there's a downside to all the plans.
No, I think, and I'll go back to my home where they want to find me, because it won't matter. I'll still be in Australia. Anyway, completely off topic.
Something to think about.
Okay, so I guess we should move on to our first interview, and I'm really keen on having a chat about this, because I don't think you could find a more interesting expat than Rachel. So Rachel left us a message saying that she was a lifer, that her journey started 27 years ago, and she'd been an expat for 21 of those. So Rachel's story, if we wanted to make it simple, would be to tell you that she's an American who married an Egyptian, and that while they live in Egypt now, they began their married life in America. They were also expats in Qatar for a long period of time. Now, just to make the story a little bit more interesting, Rachel met her husband in Jerusalem, where she was working with Israeli and Palestinian youth. Her husband had a restaurant in Sinai, and they kind of did the long distance thing for about a year before they decided to get married. Now, the first 6 years of their marriage were spent in the US, and really throughout sort of those years they were quite open to where they were going to live permanently. But once they kind of got to that 6 year mark, her husband said, look, I don't think I can live in the States permanently, and she was fine. She said, okay, well, we'll go live in Egypt. So 4 months before their son was born, she moved back to Egypt. Now, I began by asking Rachel, when she became pregnant with her son, did she really have a full understanding of how this was going to impact the rest of her life?
Absolutely not. Not even a little bit. I was one of those people who never sort of envisioned myself with kids. I did not have a maternal bone in my body, I don't think, until the day my son was born. So I didn't know what it meant to sort of have my own kid, let alone how to navigate that with extended family. And I think in retrospect, that was probably a good thing, because had I thought about, if I really had known, I'm not sure I could have sort of jumped in feet first the way we did. But I think, I mean, one of the things was we had planned to be in Egypt. And so it wasn't going to be a question of whose home do we go to for vacations, because we were going to be based here, and then I knew I would travel back to the States whenever, you know, sort of I could, hopefully once a year, which sort of, you know, more or less I did, you know, in the early years. And it wasn't until we moved to Qatar, then all of a sudden it became, wait, there's like a third country involved, because now we're not in either place. But for many years, that wasn't sort of the intention or the plan at all. So it wasn't quite as complicated as it became later. But I definitely did not sort of envision what it was going to be in the least.
You ended up having a son, and then he spent them a big chunk of his life growing up in Qatar. Like you said, you then made it more complicated by adding another country. Now, he's just gone back to university in America. So I know you see yourself...
But he never lived in America. So, it feels like back for me, but for him, he was actually moving there for the first time, other than brief visits.
Of course. So, I know this is a tough one to answer, Rachel, because I know, all right, you now see yourself in Egypt for life, that you guys will retire and live out your days in Egypt. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we've, you know, bought our home here. We're building sort of another possibly retirement home, like, you know, sort of in another town. And yes, I mean, this is sort of where we're based, definitely. And we don't have anything permanent in the U.S. And I never really built up a permanent kind of long-term plan there. So this is very much by choice where we expect to be.
And so when you think of your son going to school in America, what do you think he will choose to do?
That's a really, really interesting question. I mean, for now, he says he's planning to stay in the U.S. And I assume once he graduates, you know, that's where he'll be focused looking for jobs. But I also know that he has a very international perspective on the world. He has, you know, sort of by virtue of his upbringing, you know, sort of language skills that would be useful. And I think that as he, you know, sort of gets more into the world of work, he may consider expat work. But at this point, he's not planning it. And what's interesting is, like, a lot of people said to me, you know, he's moving back to the States. Why wouldn't you move there instead of going back to Egypt? And my thought was, you know, he's settled somewhere now for these 4 years of university. But the way things work in the States, he could go anywhere after that. You know, he's in Philadelphia now. I wouldn't be surprised if he decides to move to California after he graduates, because he has a lot of connections there. And, you know, so even if I were to move to the States, I can't sort of let what he's doing be my reason for going there, just because who knows where he'll be in a few years. It seemed like it would be a little bit short-sighted to say I'm going to plan my, you know, sort of years leading up to retirement based on where he is. And then, you know, sort of, would that mean he would feel responsible to stay where I was? And, you know, so we just sort of, you know, I still go back and visit a lot. And I actually spend a lot of time with him. Interestingly, I've spent more time with him, I think, since he's moved to the States than I did probably while he was in high school. just because I've gone for, you know, sort of his spring break the first year. I went for I was there for much of the summer vacation between his first 2 years, and then just spent almost all of January there. So that's sort of worked out well.
So if you were to meet anyone, Rachel, so say you're in a coffee shop tomorrow and you meet a young woman who's fallen in love with a man from another country and she thinks she might marry him and start a family, what sort of advice would you have for her?
Great question. And I actually do meet women like that all the time. And I think one of the biggest things, and I've gotten this not only from my own experience, but also from a lot of my friends who are married to people from other countries, I think one of the things that was really important is that we each experience each other's culture for a while. So had I met my husband here and he never moved to the States and we only lived here, I think it would have been very, very hard for me, because he really wouldn't have been able to envision where my perspective came from. So the fact that he lived in the States for a while and now we're settled here gives us both a much broader perspective on the sort of cultural baggage that we each bring into this. And so I think that would be a big piece of my advice, is sort of, you know, sort of if you're planning on kind of giving up your home to move to his home, have him be as familiar as possible with the world that you're coming from. Because, you know, sort of, I mean, marriage is obviously all about, you know, sort of trying to navigate the differences between two people. And when you're from different countries, there's just another layer of that to sort of muddle through. So I think that would be a big, big piece of my advice is sort of, you know, sort of have it be as much a two-way kind of experience as it can be.
Okay, so what did you think of Rachel's story?
Well, I was so caught up in all the details that you gave me before the interview that I was trying to sort of weave them in as I was listening, which is the whole thing is quite amazing in itself. I like what she said about her son, about children do go on to live their own lives, and we just talked about your children going on to live their own lives, Kirsty. And so why would she move to the US if she settled in Egypt for his college years? Because as she says, he could end up anywhere. America's a really big place and there's a lot of places you could go, and, you know, he may or may not move internationally after that. And she visits a lot. I'm not sure about her visit during spring break. I think that might have been cramping his start a bit. but I also liked what she said about if, and she based it on the fact that they had lived in the US. So if you are going to move from one person's home to another for the long term, make the other person as familiar with your home as possible so they understand not what you're giving up, but just how different it is for you when you move. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, that whole point about making it very much a two-way experience and talking in advance about what your differences are and what your expectations are, I thought she gave really, really good advice to anyone who's considering marrying someone of a different nationality or culture. Is, you know, they are obviously very open and understanding of each other's cultures. I thought it was really interesting. I spoke to Rachel sort of afterwards as well, because, you know, when we do these interviews, quite often we talk for 20 minutes and you can only use, you know, 7 or 8 of it. But she's really okay with not living in the US. She saw it very much as a choice rather than a consequence, which I think is obviously important, because you don't want to be grumpy about it forever. You have to be really sure that you're going to be cool with that. And the point I asked her too about being away from family, because as we get older, we all know that it gets harder. You know, it's fine when your parents are young and healthy, but as your parents start to age and you feel enormous guilt about not being around to, you know, do the doctor's trips or help out. She said that when she thinks about it, as hard as it is, and she didn't deny that it is really hard to be away from her parents, she does get back there at least once a year and sometimes 2 or 3. And she said that it was, even if she was in America, she couldn't guarantee that she would be close to them in distance.
Yeah, and that's true. And that's the same goes for Australia or a lot of countries that people move back to be close to their parents. Unless they're living sort of around the corner, there's no guarantee that you're going to spend more time with them than you would on your visits home.
That's right. That's right. Definitely the case for us. We would, my parents live in the country. So, chances of getting my husband to move to Remark are nil. He's happy to go for a week or two, but not for 2 months or so. Now, Nikki, you interviewed my friend Kristen, who I adore. I got to meet Kristen when I went for the Big Fat Expat Meetup in Singapore. But, of course, her and I have been speaking because we both had breast cancer at the same time. But you spoke to her about something very different. How did it go?
Yeah, so I spoke to her about, so she responded to the post on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page and said they came for 2 years and now they're coming up to their 12th anniversary. So she's not sure to call herself lifers, expats or immigrants in a chosen country. The whole family is British citizens, although her husband is a Greek Cypriot as well, but they now hold permanent resident status in Singapore and own a local business. So she says, I guess we started as expats and then chose to settle as a minority in a different country. And her kids talk about going to university in Singapore. So it's really interesting. So Kristen tells her family story and let's have a listen.
It kind of came to be because I came out to Singapore on a work trip and my then boyfriend, now husband, came to visit me after the work trip. And as we were leaving, we bought a book called Living in Singapore. And then we went home and we didn't think much about it. And then about 6 months later, he was working for an investment bank and his office said to him, do you want to go to New York? And he said, no, but we'd go to Singapore. And then it all went quiet again. And about 3 months after that, they handed him tickets. And that was that, really. So then we came up to Singapore in 2005 with two young children. After about 3 years, we went to Japan. And we spent 2.5 years in Yokohama. And then we came back to Singapore in 2010. And we've been here ever since. We've had two more kids since then, both of whom have been born in Singapore. And I guess the kind of crunch decision time came for us in 2011. We just had our last child and rumors of redundancy and stuff were circulating in the banking industry and it had already been quite hard hit. So anyway, what had happened is when we came back from Japan, we actually asked to be localized in Singapore as our home base. And then they came to us maybe just before Christmas and said, look, you know, there are some jobs in the UK, but we're reorganizing the department here, so the job here won't be here anymore, but do you want a job in the UK? And we said, okay, would that be as expats? Because this is our home base. And they said, oh no, that would become your home again. And we went, no, we don't think so. And that, so we started looking at what our options were. And we'd met a business broker in the meantime because we'd been talking for a while because George was saying, look, you know, we've got to get out at some point. So we'd met this business broker and we said to him, look, you know, we might be going back to the UK. We don't really know. We haven't decided what we want to do. We'd rather stay here. What have you got? And he came to us with a couple of businesses and the first few were real no's. And then he came to us with a business that was two stores selling Lego.
Oh, wow.
And so we negotiated a redundancy package with George's work and bought a business and decided we kind of did the toss up and went, what have we got to lose? What's the worst that could happen? And we figured the worst that could happen is that we'd have to pack up and go home at some point and live in Cyprus while we got back on our feet and figure out what to do, because my husband's Greek Cypriot. We figured that that wasn't such a bad thing, so given that we wanted to get out of banking and we didn't want to leave Singapore, we just jumped and went for it. Having done that, we've continued to build the business. So the business is what we do for our livelihood, basically.
Yep.
It pays the rent and the school fees and all that kind of stuff. We've built it significantly since then. And then 2 years ago, I think, 3 years ago now, maybe, we went for permanent residency here because it would just make life easier, really. We'd kind of decided that given that we had a local business and we had completely localized, we were likely to be here for the long term, so it made sense to get residency as well.
And what are the rules around residency in Singapore?
That's a tricky question. It goes on a case-by-case basis almost, it seems. So you can apply. Anyone who's been here for a certain amount of time can apply, and they have some kind of system which no one seems to quite be able to work out. But from our perspective, we had a local business, we're contributing to the economy, we're employing local Singaporeans in the business. We've got four kids, one of whom's a boy, and national service is compulsory here, and we applied for permanent residency for him as well, because actually George comes from a country where national service is still compulsory. So to us, it's not that, oh, what do you mean he's got to do national service? It was just kind of like, okay, yeah, sure. We kind of figure, I guess all of that swung it in our favor. And so we were granted permanent residency.
Kirsty, did you know all those things about Kristen?
I didn't know all of those things about Kristen. And I loved it. There's so many things, like I think you could do obviously four different podcasts just on Kristen. National service, number one, I want to know more about. Like, you can do national service here if you're Kattery. It's just for 3 months. I'm wondering what it looks like in Singapore.
Yeah, I think every countries that have national service have different programs. So, yes, that would be interesting to know. I didn't actually ask her about that. I did ask her about her kids and how they self-identify and where she sees their education and lives going. And she told me that two of them were born in the UK, but they left as toddlers, and two of them were born in Singapore. And they're kind of all still working out their self-identifications. She said they're true third TCKs, or third culture kids. She said one of them had a very funny fight with a teacher in nursery school when she was about four. And they were asking all the children where they were from and, you know, categorizing them accordingly. And her daughter kept insisting she was from Singapore, and the teacher kept insisting she was British. But she's born in Singapore, lives in Singapore, and, you know, ostensibly forever. So she was actually in the right, as Kristen said. And she sees her kids going to university in Singapore. It's one of the top 10 universities in the world. She said it's just down the road. It suits her if they keep going to go there. But she's also happy for them to go internationally as well, although she would prefer if they got some kind of scholarship to do that.
Yes, me too. That's why we don't offer it as an option. Look, one of the things I was really interested in is that they'd used a business broker to find a business in Singapore. And I wondered why that had never crossed my mind. Do you know, I love Asia. I would love to live in Asia. I would certainly think about a business broker in Australia. Why haven't my husband and I ever entertained the idea of, well, why don't we do that?
I don't know. I think it's, I agree with you. I know business brokers in Australia, and my friends have used them, and we've talked about it before. If we go back, that's an option for us to look to buy a business. But you kind of think about what you know, and I think it might be maybe a little bit overwhelming as well. Like, she was living there, she felt comfortable in it. Like, if you're living where you are now and say, oh, why don't we move to Thailand and it's called business broker, I mean, what's your level of comfort in that conversation?
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a very valid thing, and that's how businesses are sold, through business brokers. But it's a feeling of comfort and understanding in what you want to do, and just having confidence in the whole process, I guess.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That is the best way to do it. Like, go and live somewhere for a few years, you know, get a feeling
so you know.
For it. So you know. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I hope our conversation on lifers has been helpful to anyone out there who's considering of making that choice of switching for a permanent life decision in a new country, or entertaining the idea of marrying someone of a different culture or nationality. I think there were some really, really good answers and some insight into, you know, maybe it's not all that hard, or it might be a bumpy road, but it all works out in the end. Definitely has for the people that we spoke to.
Absolutely. There's lots to think about, but there's lots of people out there who've blazed the trail before you.
Okay, so Nikki, you had an idea for a new segment, and you tell me it's only going to take 2 or 3 minutes, people.
That's my plan.
All right. So I really like this idea. It's called What in the World, and it's expat things from this week. So, Nikki, tell me, I'm giving you 3 minutes.
And you're going to time me?
Yes, I'm going to time you from now. What is your expat story of what in the world this week?
Okay, so this week, now I feel I have to talk really fast. All right, so I've been thinking about this for a while, and there are so many things that happen every week in the world that impact expats, and they're a big story, but there are really lots of personal stories that happen at a level underneath them. So this came up on my Facebook feed this week, and I wanted to share it. This week, President Trump, it's now 2017, by the way, for future podcast listeners, issued an order called the Executive Order Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States. And that means for the next 90 days, foreign nationals from Sudan, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen who meet a set of criteria are not eligible for travel to the United States. Now, my friend Amy, who you can probably call a lifer, is the daughter of Australian diplomats. She and her sister travelled with their parents all around the world. They went to school in Asia, in Russia, and in the US. And I think the US, they kind of finished their schooling and went to university there. So her sister has married an American and lives in Atlanta. Her parents have retired to the northeast of the States. And Amy was in the States and now is currently working for CARE International in South Sudan. So quite an amazing story. She married in Atlanta last year. She married a Yemeni national, her husband Habib. Very happily they're pregnant, and they were planning on returning to the US for the birth so she could be near her family. She is American as well. Unfortunately, on my Facebook feed, she had shared the story, and it said, "What little hope I had left I might be able to deliver our baby in Atlanta with my Yemeni husband by my side is now well and truly gone. We are among so many innocent people affected by this ridiculous ban. I'm grateful that we have other options to consider, but many don't." So many people were saying, "Can I share your story? Can I share your story?" And so I said, "Well, could I share your story as well?" And she was very happy for us to share it on the podcast. And I think it's an example of there's a big thing and there's other things that happen underneath it. And, you know, unless you know someone personally, you don't necessarily see the repercussions of this kind of thing. And this really has a lot of impacts for the expat world. On the upside, Kirsty, she's probably going to have the baby in Australia, in Adelaide, in June, when you might be there.
Oh, I am so keen to get my hands on any newborn baby. That sounds fabulous. But I think, Nikki, you're bang on. That's a really good expat story to tell for the week, because so many of us as expat women, I've had 4 children in 4 different countries, because it's not always convenient to have your baby in the country that you're in. I've got on planes and had babies elsewhere. So I totally get it. And I cannot imagine, if you are a citizen somewhere, that your partner ends up not being able to be there for the birth.
Yeah, I just think it's a very difficult situation. And there are so many stories that have happened over the last few weeks. But this was personal to me, so I thought it was relevant for sharing right now.
Yeah. That's brilliant. And I need to get in contact with Amy, because if she's having that baby in Adelaide, I want to be there.
All right. So talking about social media and podcasts, and what are your podcasts for this week, Kirsty?
Okay. So the podcast that I am loving this week is a Gimlet and Tinder branded podcast. Now, we've talked about Gimlet before, because we talked about startup, and Gimlet was the company behind, or I guess the company that came out of startup, isn't it?
We love Gimlet
because they do lots of great podcasts. But what they've started doing now is branded podcasts, where big organisations might get Gimlet to produce a podcast on their behalf. So tell the stories of their business, I guess. So in December last year, there was an eBay branded podcast called Open for Business. And Gimlet, and Gimlet produced it. And it was fantastic. And it was very much on successful entrepreneurial stories where people have had used eBay in their business. So you can imagine the Tinder podcast is fascinating for middle-aged women like myself, who never got to be on Tinder because they're married. And so, although that doesn't seem to be a criteria for some, but
oh, we love Tinder. We love picking up other people's phones.
But yes,
swipe.
I know. I love it. No, but what I meant, Nikki, was some married people are on Tinder, even though that shouldn't.
Oh yes, no, I know that. I was choosing to choose the high road.
When you said we love Tinder. Oh.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so I have found it really interesting, because I am a woman who loves to have pop culture, but I need my statistics and my facts. And this podcast is great at giving you the statistics and the facts behind why people do what they do. So I'm going to say this in the most child-friendly way I can say. There is, just in case you're out and you're in the car and you've got kids in the car, I don't want you to have to turn it down. So there are some people that choose to take certain photographs that they send to people. In the modern dating world, those people are usually men, and they send pictures of things that they're very proud of, and they send them to women who open them and go, "Oh my God, that's hideous. Why would anyone send me a picture of that?" And they go on and they explain it, because one of the things I didn't realise is you actually can't send pictures on Tinder. So there's none of that happening to you on Tinder. It's the when you've got to the next level and you're texting each other. So they talk about the science behind why men choose to take photos of their bits and pieces and why women don't find them attractive. And it is because scientifically, they've gone out and done the science that women don't find those pictures attractive with men, but men themselves, this bit made me laugh the most, men are turned on by their own bits and pieces.
Because men are visual and women are emotional, and that is the whole premise behind the whole industry, that make movies out of those kind of pictures if we're still talking with kids in the car. Yes.
So anyway, so that's one of the episodes, and I did find it really, really interesting. There was also one woman who said she loves those pictures. She loves men to send her those pictures, and she asks all her friends to show them the pictures that the men have done. And I mean, that's a whole other story, so I won't go into it. But, yeah, that's the difference, isn't it, between why it's such a big deal emotionally for women if those pictures of their bodies are shared, whereas men seem to quite happily send out pictures of their bodies to everyone. They don't care.
It's just another of the double standards. That exists in the world.
Okay, there was another episode of it that I really liked that I thought was worth listening to called Unexpected Places, and it tells some really cute stories of stories that have come out of Tinder meetups where maybe those people haven't ended up dating, but there's been some really great stories. And I won't give the game away, but there's one that involves a potential kidney transplant, and it's definitely worth listening to. So that's one of the podcasts I was listening to. Nikki, what have you been listening to?
Yeah, well, that sounds so interesting. I've been listening to another group that makes excellent podcasts, which is NPR, of course. The podcast I was listening to was called Embedded, and it takes a deeper look at the story. So something you might hear on the news that's sort of a 20 to 30 second grab, the reporters go back and do in-depth interviews with the relevant people. So the first episode I listened to was about an HIV outbreak in Indiana. So they played the news piece, which just said, you know, in Indiana there's an HIV outbreak, and it's, you know, the largest HIV outbreak since whenever, X number of years ago. But it doesn't sort of tell you why and how and things like that. So the reporters went to Indiana. Basically, it comes down to it's a new drug problem. So a problem they didn't have before. And it's about sharing needles and sharing tools and implements and all the education that they did all those years ago to stop the first spread of the HIV epidemic is kind of, you know, they're having to sort of go through it again. And it's about how the drugs are impacting the community, and it's not really just the HIV. It's really interesting that it gets down to sort of that level. And a further episode goes down the track, goes back and tries to find some of the people they first interviewed, because, of course, all the people they interviewed said, oh, we're all going to go into rehab and we're all going to get off the drugs. So it goes back and tries to find those people and finds out exactly what happens to them later on. Another great episode I listened to was called The School, and it was about school closings in Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, and the story of the actual people involved. So they announce a school closing and what that means and how teachers are offered different jobs. So these poor kids are at school to the end of the year, and then all their teachers start disappearing because, you know, and then there's the teachers that waited out, and it just really, and then the school that they're meant to be moving to, and is that a better school or actually a worse school? And just so interesting, just the actual socio-economic impact of it all, which I just really loved. So that's my podcast for the week.
Oh, that sounds good. I realised when I was talking about the Gimlet and the Tinder podcast, that one is called DTR. I'm not sure if I mentioned that it was called DTR, which stands for, in the world of dating, Define the Relationship.
That's a new term. I haven't met that term before. Have you met that before?
That's because you've been married for 1,000 years and you don't need to define your relationship. It's marriage. Nikki, anything interesting that you've read or seen in the world of social media?
Well, for social media for me this week, I guess the thing I'm just going to bring up now and put the link to in the show notes is an International Women's Day video that I saw done by the boys of Sydney Boys High. I don't know if you saw that one, Kirsty.
I did. I thought it was brilliant. I loved the message, but I also loved how multicultural those boys were.
I totally agree. So the Sydney Boys High prefects asked women in their life why feminism was important to them, and then they read the answers in the voice of those women. So it's really lovely, and I'll post a link in the show notes. What about you, Kirsty?
I read what I thought was a really interesting article, and I'd love to hear other people's thoughts on this, is Snapchat dead? Is it dying? And the reason I ask is I this article kind of points on that a lot of people now are asking you on Snapchat to then go and follow them on Instagram. I know that when Instagram first brought out their Instagram stories, which is, if you're an Instagram user, you know that there's a line across the top where you can record your story and then it'll sort of disappear, which is exactly how Snapchat works. And yeah. I remember asking my daughter about it and saying, what did she think? And her saying, oh, I just find it really annoying because now I see the same video that I see on Snapchat, I see it on Instagram. And if you were to believe this article, you would believe that maybe Snapchat just isn't coping with the competition. You know, that now that there's someone doing the same thing that they're doing, that, you know, they're not doing as well. I don't know. I'm not a big Snapchat user.
Yes, I think this is, you know, was he a Gen Yer or was he a Gen X that said Snapchat's Gen? It could be something that the old generation wished for so we don't have to learn it properly.
Yeah, but that's what I found really interesting is he's a Gen Yer and he's a digital director at Vamoof. So when you're a digital director, you know, it's kind of your gig to be in the know. I need to speak to more, not even Gen Yers, I want to speak to the millennials, I guess, because they're the ones that will be able to tell you.
Oh, yes, that's what I meant, a millennial. Yes, who knows? Yeah, I'm not very good at Snapchat, so I'm interested to hear that because I'm getting into the whole Instagram story and the live video, but I'm not very good at getting into Snapchat. So this will suit me if this article turns out to be true.
I'm really into Instagram now. I think I love the little stories. I haven't been doing many of my own, but I do love watching other people's stories.
I know, and I enjoy it too. But I did a video the other day, and the stories stay for 24 hours, but the live video disappears straight away.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Yeah.
I'm thinking if I don't understand, someone else might not either.
Okay, so if you go to your story on Instagram and you take a photo, you can put a note on it or whatever, that stays for 24 hours in the your story thing. If you go to Instagram in your story and choose go live, which means you're live and people come in and watch and can talk to you, that video disappears as soon as the video ends. So it doesn't stay there for 24 hours. It's like Facebook Live, but you can't look at it later. So there you go. I'm here to teach.
Okay. So, announcements, Nikki, we're still working on our big fat expat meetups. And we have Dubai coming up that weekend of Saturday, April 22nd, where we're thinking we'll have a lunchtime meetup. And then we're hoping, sort of depending on the interest, that we'll do something on the Sunday, maybe a coffee morning. But we'll have more details of that coming up on the Two Fat Expats page, on the events page. And, of course, we'll be going to Shanghai in May.
Of course we will be going to Shanghai in May. And I'm not going to talk at all about anything to do with football, but I'm going to talk about that we will be having a cocktail sort of early evening event, early evening function, where we do the live podcast and have chats with all the fabulous people. So, ladies, start to plan your outfits accordingly.
Now, Nikki, every week we ask people to leave messages on the twofatexpats.com page, and each week it gets harder and harder to get people to do it. And I don't understand why, because everybody's very happy to leave Facebook comments and they're very happy to leave reviews and ratings. But I wondered, Nikki, have you been able to get anyone else to go onto that page and just push that mic button and leave a message?
Well, funny you should ask that, Kirsty. Well, you did have someone this week. Let me just play it for you and see if it sounds at all familiar.
Oh, hi guys, it's Chrissy here. Look, just wanted to say I saw this microphone button on your website and just thought it looked so easy to use, you know. I just pushed the button or clicked the button and it just worked straight away. Here I was sending you a message. Anyway, just wanted to tell you, thank you guys, great. Really, really enjoying the show. Yeah, have a great time and hopefully, you know, looking forward to the next episode. Okay, I've got to get that bloody beagle out of the cupboard. Okay, bye.
Where do you think that person came from, Kirsty?
I'm not sure. She sounds like a really nice person, though.
Well, I just like to say that that's a great starter message, but maybe you want to leave something like where you're from and, you know, where you're living. Just a few little more details. But no disrespect to Christy there. She did a great job, and we're not disrespecting anyone who leaves us a message. But please leave us a message. Please, please, please.
Now, talking about ratings and reviews, we had two fantastic new reviews on the Aussie iTunes page because, of course, everybody has their own iTunes pages. Actually, I would love to know, this would be interesting to me, because I know, Nikki, you're an American iTunes person. I'm an Australian iTunes person. What other iTunes listeners do we have out there? And when you go to the Two Fat Expats page, do we have any ratings or reviews? Tell us if we do. We'd be really interested to hear. So on the Australian page, we had Burn M, which sounds suspiciously like our friend Bernadette Morley. And she said, listen one and all, and gave us a 5-star review. And we also had Beck Jackson Graham, who is... obviously Australian, because she's taking the words of Molly Meldrum, do yourself a favour. And she said, get listening to Two Fat Expats. She's thoroughly enjoying the podcast, and she's made her way back through, and this makes us sound very professional, Nikki, our back catalogue.
Yes, well, it makes you sound professional, because she'll start listening, she'll go, well, who the hell's Nikki? Because... I've been listening to Sarah and Kirsty. But, yes, there is a back catalogue for Two Fat Expats, so that's excellent.
And she said it sounds like she's chatting to two old friends, and the issues discussed are relevant and pertinent to her life. Her only regret is not finding it sooner. So thank you so, so much, Beck Jackson Graham. That's lovely.
Okay, so that's it for this week, and we'll speak to you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.